This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Tracks on the Line, Trek FM's show where we take a look at every episode of Star Trek Picard and provide audio commentary for them. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max.
And today is the day. Can you believe it's finally here? Can you believe that Star Trek Picard is coming out, that Picard is back on screen? After how many years? 18 years?
More than that.
18 years. 18 years. More than that. I don't think it's more than that.
No, since it was good.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was watching Nemesis the other day, and I was live tweeting about it, and other people were live tweeting Nemesis, and then I go on to Letterboxd, and everybody has like Nemesis reviewed, and I'm like, geez, fairly certain that more people watched Nemesis this week than watched it the week it came out. But
take that, Nemesis.
There you go. Anyway, it's still not a bad movie.
It is.
So, Star Trek Picard, it's here. The very first episode of season one. And yeah, we're going to be talking about it.
Yes.
But before we do,
okay,
we should talk about seasons two and three.
Yes. Before we get started, let's get way ahead of ourselves. Guys, we're doing this right.
Yep. So season two, it's been officially renewed for a season two. It hasn't been officially renewed for a season three. However, as has been known, and as we may or may not have discussed, Michael Chabon is leaving the show as showrunner. He's got a good excuse. He has the opportunity to create and run a miniseries based on The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which is a novel that he wrote, which he won his Pulitzer for. So if he wants to go and make that into a TV show, I think that that's perfectly fine. I think that we should let him.
Yeah, I don't think there's like, why are you abandoning Picard, Chabon? What are you, a monster? I don't think that's a thing.
No, he's just someone who wants to adapt his own work for the small screen. And I'm in the middle of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay right now. It's hard to get through the whole thing because it's like 3,000 pages long. But I like it so far, though. Anyway, someone's got to take his place. The person who they have gotten to take his place is Terry Metalis.
Yeah.
Now, this is really interesting because, for one thing, he is the creator and showrunner behind the TV show 12 Monkeys.
Yes.
Which I haven't watched yet, but you like it a lot, right?
Great show.
Yeah. And it involves time travel and you don't hate it.
It involves a lot of time travel, and it's bananas, and it gets a lot of things wrong, but I'm fine with it.
Well,
and
that's
for
good.
Some reason, my phone just heard me say a lot of time travel and, like, woke up and like, did a search for a lot of time travel.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why.
It happens. I mean,
my phone gets me.
We just, my wife got an Alexa for Christmas, and of course we switched the the keyword to, I'm not going to say it because it'll turn on, but that thing that you think it would be if you were a Star Trek fan. And now whenever we watch Star Trek and someone says the wake word, it listens and then says, sorry, I don't know the answer to that question, you know?
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, so Terry Metalis. Here's the other thing about him. Okay, so apparently now he's like running MacGyver, and they yanked him off of MacGyver to put him on Picard because Picard is very high priority for them. But here's the thing about Terry Metalis. For one thing, I mean, as evidenced by the fact that he ran 12 Monkeys, he's a nerd. He's one of us. One of us. Yes. In fact, he owns, and this is something which I'm remembering from years ago, so I could be getting this completely wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, he owns his own time machine, DeLorean, and it is actually the time machine DeLorean that you see in an episode of like Big Bang Theory or something like that. He is very much a nerd. And here's the best part.
His association to Big Bang Theory is a bummer, but I mean, no one's
perfect. It happens. I mean, everybody's associated with Big Bang Theory, you know, even Will Wheaton. It's just one of those things that happens, you know? But he got his start on Star Trek. He worked on Voyager and Enterprise, I believe, as Brannon Braga's assistant.
Yeah, I believe that is accurate, yes.
So here he's working on this show, and now 20 years later, he's running the joint. I mean, come on. It warms my heart. You know?
Yeah. I'm happy about it. I'm happy that that somebody good is coming in to replace Chabon. It's very positive news.
Yes, and apparently they are working on breaking seasons 2 and 3 simultaneously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's another thing. I sent you this clip, and it was everywhere yesterday, but, you know, Picard, and by that I mean Patrick Stewart, was on The View yesterday. With Whoopi Goldberg, and, you know, I watched this clip, and, like, I sent it to my wife, and I get it, you know, my wife, like, I'm like, you gotta watch this right now, and she's like, well, we're watching The View now, and I'm like, just watch the clip, you know, and, you know, Whoopi Goldberg is one of the hosts of The View, and Patrick Stewart was like, I want to extend you a formal invitation to be in season 2. Did you watch the clip?
I did watch the clip.
I
watched it and I was like, wow, The View is still a thing.
The View is still a thing. And Whoopi Goldberg is coming back to Star Trek for Picard season 2. But when I saw that, it made me like really emotional. I started like misting up because, you know, it was like back then, she was the huge movie star who they had to like work around her schedule in order to get her to come on to Star Trek. And she was like, I really want to do Star Trek and I'm going to make the time for that, even though, you know, it's beneath me, you know, quote unquote. And now 20 years later, Patrick Stewart's like, you were great. And, you know, no one's left behind. Come on. And then my absolute favorite part of the whole thing, right, is when one of those people who's hosting this show, I don't know her name.
Joy Behar.
She's like, oh, you're going to make her like take all that stuff out of her hair, right?
Yeah.
And Patrick Stewart is like, she can do whatever the hell she wants with her hair. Yep. And I'm like, frick yeah, Patrick Stewart, because I mean, come on, right? Oh my God!
Oh God! I'm having a hard time dealing with the emotions of this whole thing.
It's great, isn't it?
All right, and like I watched that clip, and I was like, "This is really exciting." It's weird. People like I've heard like in recent years, people are like, Like, what was the deal with Whoopi Goldberg being on Next Generation? And, like, why was she only in some episodes? And, like, I think you and I and, like, people like us, we kind of take it for granted. Like, we know the whole thing. We know the story. We know, like, Whoopi Goldberg talked to people and, like, they were like, no, I don't buy that. And she talked to this person and that person. And then LeVar Burton was like, no, she's, like, actually serious. Like I talked to her in person. She wants to do it. And Gene Roddenberry was like, oh, my God. Well, then we've got to do it. And, mm-hmm. like, she was at the time, like, huge. And she didn't need to do it at all. And her presence was a very big deal. It lent a lot of credibility to the show. Yeah. And she still has a lot of, I mean, like, a kind of reputation as somebody significant, even though she's on The View.
You know, The View's got a lot of viewers.
It's wild, man.
It is. So that was really cool. And I mean, okay, here. I mean, because this, the, you know, the behind the scenes people, that's our thing, right? That's what we do, right?
Yeah, that's kind of our thing.
And when this thing started, spoilers, there were credits. And finally, you could, like, read who's working on the show, and, you know, it's interesting to see, right? Who's credited with what and why. And the credits that are listed are very telling to me, anyway, I think. I could be completely wrong in terms of analyzing this stuff, but I think they tell a tale. And this is what's interesting about it to me, okay? So, and I'll just stick to the writers, okay? Because, like, every time people have said, like, well, who's working on this show? Who's writing it? They're like, oh, well, there's a brain trust of James Duff, Akiva Goldsman, Michael Chabon, Alex Kurtzman, and Kirsten Beyer,
yep.
Right? People kept on saying, like, well, who's the showrunner? Who's this? And they're like, it's just a thing. It's just these people, and they're all just doing it together, and it's just a thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, that's cool. So there's not, like, a writer's room. It's like a writer's room with, like, five showrunners. That's interesting, okay? I mean, like, what exactly is going on this show? And now that we see credits, we can see that there is a larger writing staff, one which encompasses 9 people. 9 people on this writing staff.
Yeah.
But here's the really interesting thing to me, really interesting about all this. So you've got James Duff, Akiva Goldsman, Michael Chabon, and Alex Kurtzman, right? And Kirsten Beyer, too. But those four were the executive producers, and everyone's like, who's the showrunner? And everyone assumed that it was James Duff, because James Duff is the guy who's done this before. He's, in a lot of ways, the most successful showrunner of the bunch, right? Yes. The others have done other things, like won Pulitzers and stuff, but he's the one guy on this team who's actually done the job for a long time.
Yeah, you kind of picture the room as like he's at the head of the table, and Chabon is kind of like the John Swartzwelder of the group. Like, he rolls in with a pipe and he says his thing, and everyone listens and is like, that's a good idea. We should do what Michael Chabon said. And then Michael Chabon, like, rolls his cape up and walks out of the room because he's Michael Chabon and he can do that.
I guess that's one way of interpreting it. My way of interpreting it was always like, you know, all these guys came up with this idea, right? And mm-hmm. like James Duff is the only one out of those five who's not credited as a creator, right? So I always got the impression that like Chabon, Kurtzman, Goldsman, and Beyer came up with this idea, crafted it into something which, you know, was whatever. And then they were like, let's turn it into a TV show. How do we do that? And then James Duff is like, step aside, guys. I got this, you know?
Yeah.
And he was the one who could actually, you know what I mean? I, of course, I'm really simplifying all of this, but
yeah, we're trying to like like the burden of being us is that we're not only watching the show, we're also watching the show about the show in our heads.
Be such a good show. When are it they would be green such
like
a, that?
I don't understand why it's never been a thing. Like why they haven't made a show about like the making of a Star Trek series? Because like literally every one of them is like a solid show.
Oh man, can you imagine the Discovery show?
The Discovery show would be bleak. There are a
That would be like the Deep Space Nine of Star Trek behind the scenes shows. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, it would be the Hill Street Blues. Like, like there would be a lot of characters coming and going. There would be a lot of, like, main character deaths. It would be weird.
Yeah. But regardless of any of that... you know, it was kind of a surprise after, like, I think the show had been almost completely shot that they officially announced that the showrunner was Michael Chabon. And it's like, okay, were you guys like keeping this secret for a big reveal? Because that seems kind of weird. You'd think that you would just say it. Like, why are you saying this? Like, it did not feel like a big reveal. It felt like this just happened, right?
Yeah.
And
apparently that's not the way it went. Apparently.
Well, I'm not 100% positive on that, okay? Because let's look at this here. So the credits for this episode, right? I mean, the screenplay is Akiva Goldsman and James Duff. Okay, yeah. Fine, right? But then let's look at the other people on the show who I'm assuming are writers because they have writerly credits and they've also written things in the past. You've got, aside from the five that we talked about, you've got Jenny Lamette, makes total sense. She co-wrote Children of Mars and she's, that one makes sense. Not at all surprising. And she wrote this really, really great movie called Rachel Getting Married, Jonathan Demme. It's fantastic. Watch it.
It's
awesome. Then you've got Samantha Humphrey, who has written, she wrote an episode of Alias. The other shows, which she's done a lot of, are CSI New York and NCIS New Orleans. And I was thinking about this. It seems like every time they have one of these spinoff shows with a city, it's a city that has two words in the name, I think, so that they can abbreviate it. Like N-O or N-Y, L-A.
CSI Miami.
Yeah, but they were just figuring out how to do it at that point.
They were just, that was just like the beta test, and they were like, guys,
yeah,
Miami's only got the one letter.
Mm-hmm.
We really dropped the ball on this one letter city.
Right, and then the next one was New York, right?
Yeah. I think you might be making a weird leap here.
I'm just saying. I think it's a possibility. Then you've got three more people. One, two, three more people. So one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. There's 10 writers. Okay. So you got three more people. Damani Johnson, Ralph Gifford, and Nick Zayas. All three of them wrote for Major Crimes, which is one of two shows that James Duff created.
Uh-huh.
That, to me, says that he was the showrunner and he brought on his people to make this show.
It's possible, but like, I think that there's another more complicated way of looking at it, that like this show was in some ways like he was kind of a hired gun in a sense, because they brought him on because, yeah, you can make a show. We need you to get this car moving. And once it is, like, we're going to like drive it. But like, you have the experience in getting these shows going, so we need your help for this. And based on the story that we've heard, like, I mean, in the after show, Ready Room, which is what the after show is called.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. No spoilers.
Gotta say, weak name.
It's a thing. A thing, and it's like, what? Never mind. Just doesn't never matter. Mind.
I'm just saying, it's a weak name. Anyway, Michael Chabon says, like, like, they had a pitch. They went to Patrick. He said no. Like, they said to Shaban right before they went to Patrick, we're doing this thing. You want to be involved? And he was like, oh, my God, that sounds amazing. And then they said, oh, he said no. And then Shaban was like, well, now I want to do it. And he, like, wrote a bunch of stuff, and he wrote, like, 30 pages. And they took that to Patrick, and Patrick was like, I'm in. And then they threw those 30 pages out and started again. And it was mainly like Kurtzman, Goldsman, Shaban, and Beyer in the room when they built the initial pages to get the show going.
Yeah. Okay. It's weird. I mean, that's why they're credited as the creators, right? So it makes sense. So
I think it makes sense. I think it seems reasonable that that's the way it went down. I don't have any difficulty understanding how it goes. I mean, like, I imagine that the contract negotiations behind the scenes were a nightmare. But the best part about being us is that we don't have to worry about that.
Okay. Well, then we just won't worry about it. So should we watch this thing?
Oh, my God. Let's watch this thing again.
I know it's been said numerous times, but like I came across a tweet from you the other day, and what did you say here? You said something really weird. You said, with Star Trek dropping Picard in 2 days, I'm starting to freak out a bit. I've gone from yay to I'm going to go crazy watching the first episode repeatedly, impatiently waiting for the next one, and then I'll do it again the next week with 2 episodes, then 3, etc. And my response was, this is not normal behavior from this person, because it's not. So,
and my response was, he has a dog, though.
This is true. All right. So should we watch it?
Yes.
What number is this for you? How many times have you seen it now?
It's not a crazy high number.
What's the number?
It's not absurd. It's like a number
let's keep this in mind. I don't know what time you woke up this morning, but okay. I woke up at 5:30, and that was 14 hours ago.
Okay. Picture a number in your head that you would say is reasonable. Okay?
Cuz
it's a little bit more than that.
So 5?
Oh, apparently I was way off.
So how many?
This will be number 8.
All right. So 8. 8. Okay. You ready for this?
Yes.
This is number 3 for me, by the way. Okay. Although here's another thing. I just need to say this one more thing. And I posted this on Twitter and I tried sending it to you, but for some reason it kept on failing. But I woke up at 5:30 in the morning to watch this.
Yes.
And, you know, we watched it, me and my wife and my cat. And, you know, obviously I was like riveted to the screen. And then I go to work and I get to work and I see a text from my wife with a picture. And she's like, here's a picture of you watching Picard this morning. And I'm sitting there with my Earl Grey, and I am like, I have like pinpoint laser focus on the screen. And I'm like, I had no idea you took a picture for me. And she's like, yeah, I know. I took a bunch. And then she sent me like 10 pictures that she took of me sitting there watching this show. I was completely oblivious to the fact that she was taking pictures of me watching this show. But yeah. That's that.
Yeah.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to start this approximately 7 seconds in on the CBS All Access version, right after the CBS All Access logo cuts to black. So, yeah, right before the start of the show proper.
Yeah. Post-logo, pre-show, yeah. Ready to go.
All right. One other thing.
Really?
They surprised really? Us all this morning by releasing it in Dolby Vision, high dynamic range. It's not 4K, but it's Dolby Vision. That's pretty cool. Looks great.
Okay.
All right. Now are you ready?
No. Now I'm all messed up. Yeah, all right. I'm ready.
All right. We'll do a countdown.
Uh-huh.
And we'll start this up in 3, 2, 1, start. Blue Skies. By Bing Crosby. Hey.
By Bing Crosby.
Bing Crosby. Sure. Denise Crosby's grandfather. And of course, Blue Skies being the song that Data sang at Riker and Troy's wedding right before he died. Now, okay, here, this some.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Are we doing this?
Some jerk ruined this for me by, like, posting a picture of this Enterprise D online. But, whoa, right? The Enterprise D?
Yeah.
Looking all, like, shiny? That's cool.
Yeah.
And here they are in 10 forward, but it's, like, lit all cool. And
Data's wearing the wrong uniform.
This dream's all messed up.
I mean, like, right from the beginning, I was like, well, this is definitely a dream, not a memory. Because his memories have better continuity than this.
Yes, he's wearing the wrong uniform. They're in a ship that blew up. And, you know, there's other stuff going on, too. Like, five Queens of Hearts and stuff.
Yeah, they're playing with five decks, apparently. That was weird. Mm-hmm. I spent some time trying to figure out what that meant, and I was like, I don't know if that means anything.
Borg Queen. It could be the Borg Queen, you know. Yeah,
but, like, I mean, are we saying that he's still connected to the Hive? I mean, what are we doing here?
I don't know what we're doing. But it's cool. And, oh, the photography is really nice. And here's the thing. You know, maybe it's because things are in HD now or whatever, but it seems like, you know, you have the ability to do close-ups a lot more than you did back in the day. And,
yeah.
Oh, here's another thing which is messed up. He's putting milk in his tea. I'm pretty sure he always drank his tea black. No milk, no sugar.
I agree, but people do it.
Yeah, I thought that was like an Irish thing. Isn't it an Irish thing? Or no, it's a British thing, right?
It is a British thing.
Okay, to put milk in your tea.
I don't know if it originated there, but it is a thing. It's definitely a thing. It has been offered to me many times, and many times I thought, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
I tried it when I was a kid. My dad said he used to do that as a kid, but he didn't as an adult because it's weird. Okay, and now Mars is exploding.
So here's a question that I had: did they build a 10 forward or is that CG?
I don't know. I wonder,
because it seems to me like it would be a waste of money to build the 10 forward set.
Oh, here we are. Oh my God. It's the star of the show. Number one.
Every time he's on screen, I'm very happy.
Yeah. He's got a little bed. Yeah. So
he's the best boy.
So they're in France now. Chateau Picard.
Yeah. He's got robots watering the vines. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He seems to have a larger staff than we see.
Well, it seems like they've expanded a lot, right? I mean, his house looks a lot nicer and everything like that.
Well, they must have rebuilt the house. I mean, it burned down.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And then now here we are in Boston. And there's
Greater Boston. It's better than the old one. It's greater now.
There you go. The Patriots have left town. All is right in Massachusetts.
Sports.
Yeah. There's one of our four leads as credited in this, although I'm assuming it's just because we haven't seen some other ones, right? But yeah. Dodge, who, you know, good on them for being like, Dodge, Dodge, Dodge. She's playing Dodge. And then you get halfway through this episode and they're like, well, Dodge is dead. And, you know, and I was like, well, how are they going to explain that? Because clearly, you know, she's a regular, but no, she's not playing Dodge. She's playing that other person whose name I don't remember.
There's so much that happens in this very early on. There's a part of me that's like watching this, like, oh my God, I can't believe that this is really happening. And there's another part of me that's like, wait, what are we saying here? Like, hold on. So wait, how she's going to the Daystrom Institute. Like, is there no research? Like, she has like a fake past. Like, I guess Section 31 just is not working anymore because apparently, like, they let an android slip through,
or they just don't care. Right?
That's a huge security risk.
Yeah. Oh, now here she's activated. Now, the fight scenes, like the hand to hand combat scenes in this, are really well done.
Yes. So like at this point, like I was like, okay, so hold on. She's like an amnesiac assassin. So she's like Gina Davis, and Patrick Stewart is Sam Jackson's character.
You know, I only
100% on board.
I only saw that movie once and I fast forwarded through the middle because I didn't want to watch any more of it. So
it's the best thing Rennie Harlan's ever done.
Are you including Drive?
I am.
I don't believe you. So, okay. She's now here. We're seeing these shots of Picard, which I thought for sure were just shot for the promo, you know, and all the commercials, but apparently not. They're actually in the thing, and we cut to... Here we are. Now, I still, like, I'm having trouble processing the song. I need to hear it. You know, I guess, I mean, you tell me, is six enough or eight enough? Or, I don't know, six more times? But, I mean, I'm down with it. It's growing on me. I mean, the Discovery theme took a while to grow on me, too. But this is a very Discovery-like sequence.
What, the opening title credits mm-hmm. sequence?
Yeah.
I mean, sure, like the abstract quality, the way that images bleed into other images. Yeah, it's got that, but it's also like the best ever.
And the fake film dirt?
Yeah, it's like the best opening credits ever.
It's really good. With this eyeball and stuff like that, you know, from like a theoretically synthetic person, it definitely has some Westworld vibes to it. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the way that like all the different like images of the show are kind of like, and the past of the show are all sort of like wrapped up in it, like synthetic life. And Mars and Romulus and Picard and like the creation of the synthetic brain, like it's all very cool.
It is cool. I mean, I think maybe I like the Discovery one better just because it's a bit more minimalistic, a bit cleaner. I don't know.
But like that opening image of like the like that glass breaking of the scene is really cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I do have to say I was disappointed by the title font. You know, they got Star Trek in like Discovery font and then the Picard thing with the you know, I guess I was getting all excited after Children of Mars and I was thinking they were going to go with like the credit font from Next Generation, but like in big, bold, red letters. And then they didn't do that. And, you know, and this is,
I was happy to hear a flute.
Okay. Yeah.
That was pretty cool. I like that there's a flute in there.
Here he is speaking French. That's weird.
Yep. The universal translators are not like so ubiquitous apparently on Earth because like the assassins were like speak English. Mm-hmm. Like guys, there's an easy way to avoid that problem.
Well, maybe it's the type of thing where you can tell that like a person is not speaking the language that they're speaking, even though that's what you're hearing. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows exactly? So he's hanging out with some Romulans here. Yep. That's cool. Certainly, I mean, like, you know, we're seeing this already, you know, a lot of the social commentary here and everything and how it ties into modern events and all that stuff. And I just have one question to ask you, Max. I mean, this is just something which has been bothering me ever since I saw this episode this morning. But why does Star Trek, modern Star Trek, have to be so political? Why can't we go back to Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future, which is just a couple of ships, like, shooting each other, you know? I'm just saying. It bothers me. So here's the thing. Short treks, right? I feel like there's some missed opportunities here. Like, when are we going to get a short trek, which is just a tutorial on how to tie that knot?
I assume you have to have a very thin material.
Uh-huh.
And I have seen similar knots on other materials. So I assume that with a very thin material tie, and it's, if it's long enough, you could get that knot just basically following the same knot course as the other ones. But, like,
that knot's,
I've
insane.
Never tied a tie that intricately before. And when he said, like, this knot is ridiculous, I was like, yeah, it is. I'm gonna totally do that now.
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. So I want the tutorial so that we can do that. So that's a Tellarite, I guess.
I believe so. Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
And the interviewer here is Maren Dungey. Is that how you pronounce her name? I forget. But she's on Alias. She plays Sydney Bristow's roommate.
Yeah, yeah, cool. That's right. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And here, now, this scene, I know I said that I've seen the episode twice already. This scene I've watched about 10 times because I kept on having to rewind it to process the information that they were shooting out here, because there's so much, and, you know, and I just watched Nemesis and I just watched 09 in preparation for this thing, and I'm like, okay, wait. So the attack on Mars came after the attack on, or I'm sorry, after the destruction of Romulus, and it happened because the synths broke into the thing and it stopped I mean, there's a lot going on.
No, the Utopia Planitia shipyards were constructing ships that were to be used in the evacuation of Romulus. During that process, the Synth Uprising destroyed the Utopia Planitia shipyards and the colonies on Mars, killing all the people. And Starfleet said, all right, we're not doing the evacuation fleet. And Picard was like, well, then I quit. And they said, okay. And he's like, wait, hold on. I meant that as a threat. You weren't supposed to go cool.
Okay. So that makes sense now. I guess I was under the impression that they were like, you led this armada to go rescue these people.
He had already begun the evacuation, but to get everyone would require more. And that was what was being done. That was the resources were being expended to do this thing. And when the attack happened, Starfleet said, okay, well, we've suffered a loss. We're not going to help them anymore.
So the synths destroyed the shipyard maybe to prevent Romulans from being saved.
Well, I mean, there are other places where ships are made and built and stuff. That's the main one. That's the big one. That's where you could make the most. But, like, yeah, I mean, that was a big blow. But, like, there were other options. So I don't think that the synths did it to stop the evacuation of Romulus. If so, I mean, they could have done other things. That's probably the closest, simplest way of severely hurting the evacuation.
Okay. All right.
But, like, so, do synths just not like Romulans? Is it like a dwarves, elves thing?
Well, I mean, we see Romulans on a Borg ship. I think that might be, like, a thing which is revealed over the course of this show, is that for whatever reason, yeah, synths don't like Romulans, you know?
I don't like that motivation. I think that's problematic for me. I think it has to be more specific than that.
Because they say, like, we have no idea why they did it, right? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm still trying to put all the pieces together. Like, so there was, maybe we should have read that countdown comic, but we couldn't read that countdown comic because they didn't get the last issue out in time. And also, maybe countdown comics don't matter so much, since this episode pretty much overwrites everything that happened in the countdown comic for 09. So there you go.
Oh, boy.
Expanded universe.
Yeah. So this scene, like, there was chunk of this episode where I was like, oh, I think I'm going to be okay. I don't think I'm going to be, like, losing it through this whole thing. Uh-huh. And then that scene happened, and I was like, oh, no, this is getting difficult.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense in a lot of ways, right? Like, what would get him to leave Starfleet, you know? Starfleet
shirking their responsibilities to help people.
Yeah, Starfleet not living up to their ideals, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that that's something which is relatable to a lot of people these days too, right? I mean...
You'd think.
You'd think. By the way, of course, they're already selling that sweater and,
Yeah, but, like, they're not selling that coat that she's wearing.
Yeah. They'll get to it.
Which is pretty cool.
They'll get to it. It's only been a day.
Yeah,
you can already buy the sweater and the pin. So
that's so many hours, though. They could have put that coat out there. I mean, what's taking them so long with the coat?
I don't know. If you ask, maybe if you buy the sweater, they'll sell the coat. So
great. Now I gotta buy a sweater with a mock turtleneck.
Well, I bought the sweater against my better judgment, but it was a company in Chicago, and I was like, whatever. And
you got to rep your dam.
Yeah, you know, so. And I'm like, I can wear this to work. Like, this is cosplay that I can wear to work.
Yeah, I get that.
So, whatever. I'm sure I'll regret it, but it happens. It was the heat of the moment. I watched the thing at 5:30 in the morning, and I'm like, damn, I just saw that sweater online yesterday. This thing is going to sell out in minutes, isn't it? You know, I need to buy this now before everyone else does. But they already shipped it, which is unique for Star Trek cosplay. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So Daj, is she Data's daughter? What's going on? But she's human?
Yeah.
Or at least organic?
She's made out of, you know, she's not like Data, where, like, she's got a bunch of LEDs under her skin. She's an android made out of goopy goop stuff, like humans,
like,
you know?
Like on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, like she's an organic android.
Okay, now, not to interrupt you, but there is a case of, like, so how many times have we seen dermal regenerators, right? And they've always been in wide shots, and it's like, let's see a little thing, like, shooting out, and then it's going to be fixed. But here, they're like, let's do it as a close-up, and you see the little weaving back and forth. That was a cool effect right there, I just have to say. Anyway. Oh, my God, something else we didn't talk about. I mean, come on, when he goes to get his tea, and he's like, tea, Earl Grey, decaf.
Decaf, yeah.
You're breaking my heart.
No, man. No, no, no. You know what's going on. You get it, right?
Like, right now he's living like his, you know, sort of laid back. He's like, I'm done. I'm out. And then there's going to be like the moment like that have like the Unforgiven moment where like he needs to go in and like he pulls the drink. But instead of like pulling the whiskey off the shelf like Clint Eastwood does, I think it's been like 15 years since I've seen that movie. He's going to be like tea, Earl Grey. Caffeinated.
No, he's gonna say tea, Earl Grey, and then he's gonna look off to the left and then to the right, and then a close-up on his eyebrows and the tips of his eyes, and he's gonna look up
as we dolly
and say hot,
and then it does a cut to him like from behind as he's like leaving the room and like the door goes psh,
no and then as, back as it in closes, black starts playing
and you see like steam like you know still like rising up. Yeah, okay, I'm cool with that. Something to look forward to.
I'm very excited about all of the things that I want to happen.
Yep.
There is a moment in this episode that I've seen over and over again, and I think is weird.
What's that?
He's like, "May I see your necklace?" And she takes it off. They're like right across a table.
Uh-huh.
She could lean forward.
That's like one of those things where it's like, you know, in the script, they were sitting at like a dining room table, you know, I mean, like they talk about that, like on the Limey commentary where like, you know, he's like walking down a hallway and there's like a framed picture of this woman. And then he like takes the picture off the wall and, you know, the writer is like, what were you doing here? What he's like, that's, and the director's like, that was what was in the script. And he's like, yeah, the picture was on a wall, but I imagined like a wall full of pictures. And then he sees it, not just like there's a shrine to this woman, you know, with this one picture on a blank wall. You know, yeah. It's one of those things.
I mean, like I also think like sometimes I'm doing the headcanon and like thinking like, okay, well, like what's an explanation for why that would happen? It's like, oh, well, things are different in the 24th century. So, you know, like she takes off the necklace and hands it to him because that's what you do in the 24th century. Like, that's just sort of the way it goes. You take off your necklaces more regularly with greater frequency. Does one take off one's necklace?
I guess.
It's weird. Anyway, she doesn't even put it back on. She just leaves it there. It's like, it's her necklace. She's presumably had it for some time. Well, it matches her twin sister that she doesn't know exists. Like, there's a lot of weird stuff going on there. Like, she's had this since she was incepted with whatever personality she has as a sleeper agent, and she just leaves it on Picard's table. Like, apparently that's part of her programming to leave this for Picard to follow a lead. I mean...
could be. You never know.
Guys, we're in the weeds here with this necklace thing.
Picard has always had messed up dreams going all the way back to First Contact. When that little needle like pushed in his eyeball and his eyeball like moved and stuff.
Going all the way back to the series, man. Everybody had messed up dreams on Next Gen.
Yeah, I guess so.
Brandon Braga loved a dream sequence, man.
That's true. So she's gone. I think the solar panels on the bridge, that's a holdover from Discovery, right? Or maybe Star Trek 09? I think I've seen that before. Right?
I don't know. I don't remember. I'm not sure if I clocked in any previous thing.
This looks like they're on a green screen. The way that they're walking does not quite seem to match up with the ground, but that's okay.
Well, we're in the Jedi archives. I mean, no, the the Quantum Archives.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. And then these are, you know, like they had the little touring, you know, Picard exhibit going around. And like, I think pretty much everything in this room was on that tour, you know, the Captain Picard Day banner and the little ships and everything. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of cool. I do like there are so many little things in this, and they brought it up in the ready room, but they addressed the banner and the significance that Picard has held on to it.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. When they had the banner in Vegas, you could tell that it was, I mean, it certainly looked at least like it was the one from the show, because it was all old and kind of moldy and stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, a bunch of kids made it, and they like rolled it up and put it in a tube somewhere for 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get t-shirts of that, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I did the math and everything, and, you know, he talks about how Data painted this in like 2369, so that would have been like season 6.
Yeah, that checks out.
Everything cool happened in season 6.
It matches the uniform he's wearing in Picard's subsequent dream.
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, someplace off screen in season 6, Data painted 2 paintings, and one of them was of a young woman, and like nobody said, "Data, who is that?" And he said, "I don't know, I just made her up." And nobody made a big deal about that. Like, that's kind of big.
I mean, he was painting things all the time, right?
So yeah, but he wasn't inventing.
I mean, was he inventing here, or was it, I got the impression that Maddox was like, I'm going to base this on Data's painting, which, by the way, I mean, like,
but Data invented that face.
Okay. I mean, but that's fine. You know,
I'm just saying, like, if I was on the Enterprise D and Data painted that and I saw it and I asked him, who is that? I don't recognize her. And Data said, I made her up. I'd be like, Data, this is big for you. We need to make a bigger deal out of this. This is a whole B plot.
Maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, speaking of Maddox, you know, the way that they gloss over it here, the way that they name drop him, and they're like,
yeah,
you know, Ralph, I don't know, what's his name? Ralph Maddox?
Ben? I think it's Bruce.
Bruce Maddox. And they're like, Bruce Maddox, he brought me out. Like, he was really important. And he disappeared, and no one's seen him since. We looked for him, we couldn't find him. You know, like, I mean, is he going to be like the Colonel Kurtz of the series? Like, is he the boss at the end of the level? Or, I mean, like, what's going on here, right? I mean, we have to see him, right? He has to be in this show now, right?
I would agree that we have to see Maddox at some point. I don't think he necessarily needs to be involved.
I mean, maybe it's a thing where they're like, we have to find Maddox. And then they're like, well, Maddox is dead, you know, yeah, or
he
something.
Could be dead. But it could be like Noonien and Soong, where like for like at least a season or two, we think that he's dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe he shows up at some point and he's like, yeah, I did some good work. Once I admitted to myself that Data was a person, I really got somewhere.
Yep. So, it'd just be interesting to see what they do with that. But I mean, clearly they were setting something up there. It was too specific for it not to be something.
No, definitely. They're definitely setting up like Maddox followed up on the research and he got pretty far. They did some impressive work, and they basically got there. Like, they got to the point where they were able to recreate the parts of Data that were the most significant.
Yeah.
And pretty excited about it.
The way that Picard tells her, like, you're an android, right? I mean, it's... He doesn't have that same sort of, like, I don't know, soft touch that Deckard has. You know what I mean? I mean, not that Deckard's touch is soft. I mean, he's like, bad joke. Right?
You're saying that Picard isn't revealing this information as gently as a Blade Runner?
I'm just... maybe it's that he doesn't realize the significance of it, like what it can, you know. She's like, no, I have these memories, and he's like, and that's really cool that someone put those in your head and no one can take that away from you, but sorry, you're not a human. I think
that what he's saying is, look, I know that you've got this anti-synth bigotry in your head, but shut up about that. Because you're talking smack about someone I cared a lot about. So shut your mouth. You're a synth, and it's fine.
Maybe.
Deal with it.
Maybe.
I'm Picard. I can say that.
It just the way that it's presented seems interesting to me. Like he doesn't realize how big of a deal it is to her, you know?
I agree that I don't think that he's treating it like she wants him to treat it, but I think that he's handling it the way he should be handling it. He's saying, you're a synth and it's fine. It's really fine. It may be. Honestly, a little bit better than fine. Let's be honest here. It's pretty great. Can I get a thumbs up on being a synth? Because let's be fair here, humans not doing so great lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you hear about why I left Starfleet? Anyway, here's the deal. You're like Data. He was great. You're great. Let's move on.
Oh, here they go, running up the stairs. I can totally relate to Picard here. This is how I felt when my sister was like, let's take the stairs up to the fifth floor of the parking garage when we went to see Mean Girls the musical. Yeah.
Okay.
No. And I guess those are, I mean...
Picard is in his 90s.
No, yeah, I know. Okay. No, it wasn't that bad. But, phasers here, are they not similar to Romulan phasers in Next Gen, right? I mean, they kind of have that vibe.
I don't know.
I mean, like, they had like to sort me of they like look like the guns from the bottom.
To me, they look like the guns from Disney's The Black Hole.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Disney's The Black Hole?
Is it on Disney Plus?
Of course it is.
Well, maybe I'll check it out sometime.
You should totally check it out. It's not great.
Yeah. Okay. Another great fight scene, by the way. The stairs really thing. I mean, there's like one shot coming up where she like kicks this guy over a railing and he kind of breaks his spine on it. It's cool.
Yeah. There's a point here coming up in a moment where a Romulan like spits poison at her, and my wife is like, whoa, I didn't know Romulans could do that. And I was like, I don't think that he used his poison spitting ability. I don't think he's a Dilophosaurus from Jurassic Park. I think he bit on a poison capsule.
No. I had the same exact thought. You know, I'm like, I thought like her like punch to the gut or something like that made him like cough up the blood. And I'm like, Romulans have acid for blood, like xenomorphs. And but watching it the second time, I'm like, oh yes, okay. So he had like a fake
tooth. It's a suicide pill.
Yes.
And he bit down on it, and it made him spit up, and it got on her and the blaster, and it blowed her up.
Yeah.
But let's be fair here. She's probably alive.
You think so?
Yeah.
See, I would have said, she's totally alive. How are they going to get her out of this one? But then, you know, they were like, well, she's got a twin. And I'm like, oh. But then again, like, here's some of the, where, you know, they bring
it's an
stuff
off-screen
up.
Death.
Yeah, and they bring stuff up which doesn't really, where it's like, what, you know, they're like, he's like, where's Dodge? She was with me. And they're like, what? No, she wasn't. Oh,
yeah.
She must have been using a cloaking device. That explains it, although it doesn't explain it at all if you're talking about, you know, like, narrative perspective or whatever, right? So
it explains why there's no record of her being with him.
Yeah.
It doesn't explain why there were no, like, charred remains on a flight of stairs.
Right. Or why, you know, they're like, we couldn't see her on the security footage. And it's like, okay, could you see these people, you know, like fight clubbing themselves around these stairs or what? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
The whole situation is strange. I I'm trying to, like, figure out, like, the plan within the plan. Because, like, Dodge's, like, mom, in quotation marks, is like, you got to go back to Picard. And I'm like, wait, hold on. She's not real. She's, like, she's her handler or something. And this is a plan. Like, they've set this up for some reason. But why this plan? This is weirdly labored. Like, there seems to be, like, some spy game going on that's got more than one party, and we're well in the dark about all of it.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot will be revealed. This is a rather complex plot. I mean, I wonder how someone who is not a Star Trek fan would process it. Like, would it be easier?
I thought about that. I thought about that. Okay. And what I think is, who cares?
I kind of think they would have an easier time with it because they wouldn't be like, but the Romulans, and that, you know, they wouldn't be trying to fit it into the backstory. They'd just be like, okay, these guys have this motivation, you know? Anyway, here's Allison Pill. Lead number 3 of 4 in this episode. And Allison Pill is the best. She was the drummer in Sex Bomb in Scott Pilgrim. Yep. And she was in Vice, and she's awesome all the time.
Yep.
So
when Picard is like, "How would I make a synthetic out of flesh and blood?" and she starts laughing, I have the same reaction.
Okay.
Because he does not do small talk at all.
This is what I'm saying with the other thing, right?
I love it.
That's fine.
Doesn't mess around. He gets to the point, and everyone gets it because they're like, you know what? Honestly, I find it exhausting too.
And I guess that really is kind of, you know, that's his personality. And maybe, like, people don't really think of that because he's usually in a command structure when he's having conversations, right? So they're like, why don't you come and play poker with us? It's not because he doesn't like small talk, but because he doesn't like fraternizing with his subordinates. But maybe he also doesn't like small talk. It's interesting.
Well, I think he's not good at it. I get it. He doesn't know, like, I don't understand. Why would I waste time? I'm here to ask her a question. I'm going to ask her the question.
Yeah.
And I ask and she's laughing now. Okay. Apparently that was a crazy thing to ask.
Okay. And here we see B4, who does not have Data's memories and does not whatever they were doing in the comics and the books. And B4 has, like, 3 separate stories going on.
Take that.
It's not a complaint. It's just an observation.
No, I'm saying that the writers of those books and comics are being told that what they did doesn't matter because the show is overwriting it.
Which is interesting, considering the fact that Kirsten Beyer is one of the creators of this show, and she's heavily involved with both the books and the comics, including, you know, having written numerous comics with the person who wrote the Countdown comic that's being overwritten. So
the symbol for fractal neuronic cloning. It's just two circles.
Yeah.
That's not a great symbol.
It's simple.
It's a weak symbol. I mean, like, basically, it's like the simplest Venn diagram ever.
I mean, what do you want it to be?
I don't know. Something a little bit more complex. Maybe one circle is bigger than the other circle. Maybe like they're intersecting in a way that is other than like a basic Venn diagram. Maybe I'm just spitballing here, but more than two circles.
I mean, I guess the thing about it which surprises me is that it's essentially something that can't be copyrighted. But
sure.
Maybe I'm being cynical.
I mean, fractal neuronic cloning is not going to take off as a concept. I don't think that people are going to be like, oh, yeah, I love fractal neuronic cloning. I'm going to rep that.
No, no, no. But people are going to say, like, I love Star Trek Picard. Give me that necklace.
No. But they are going to be like, I love Star Trek Picard. Give me that hooded coat.
So this is, we got to the very end and now we're off planet. I was kind of bummed by this because the entire rest of the episode takes place on Earth, you know, not counting dreams.
Yeah.
Oh.
Why were you bummed by that?
I just like the idea of, you know, a pilot for a Star Trek episode not going into space.
You know? I agree. Like, I remember I saw a tweet, like, people were like, people have been complaining because they heard that, like, several episodes of this show take place on Earth.
Why would you complain about that? I don't understand.
People were complaining about that. And okay. I was like, I don't understand that at all. Like, if they said that this was the Picard number one show and it's basically primarily Vineyard Admin, I would be on board.
Oh, yeah. I'd watch the hell out of that show. Yeah.
So when I hear, like, they go to space, I'm like, do they bring the dog?
It's true. He does say that. So here's Harry Treadaway, cast member number 404.
Mm-hmm.
This episode, this movie, this show, whatever it is.
This television show movie?
Yeah.
Television movie show.
Yeah. Hey, it's in widescreen, anamorphic, 2.39 to 1.
What isn't these days?
I know. I was kind of hoping, like, if they were going to do something crazy with the aspect ratio, I was kind of hoping they'd do 4:3, you know, throwback. Right?
Really?
I would have been down with that. Everybody's doing 4:3 these days. There's that new movie coming out this week, Gretel and Hansel. Or maybe it's next week. It's got Alice Krieger in it.
Oh my God.
The Queen.
And does it have an interesting aspect ratio?
Yes, it is. 1.55 to 1.
Wow, that's two numbers.
I posted that on Twitter.
There's a freaking Borg cube on the screen, and you're excited about two numbers.
I'm just saying, like, I posted it on Twitter, and someone was like, when I read this tweet, I thought you meant that there was one Hansel to every 1.55 Gretels. And I'm like, that works too. Anyway, yeah, that was a Borg cube. Yeah.
Yeah.
But all weird looking. It's a weird looking Borg cube with.
Well, it's clearly been damaged and repurposed.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, what is a reclamation site? What are they reclaiming?
Romulans.
I mean, is that what it is? Because it's like a water reclamation site, and they said like Romulan reclamation site.
I think, yeah, they're reclaiming like the Romulan culture and like civilization.
Okay, all right. Okay, that's cool. I guess that makes sense.
Like, I mean, like, if you got a Borg cube, they're humongous. They're gigantamous ships. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you need to move lots and lots of people and house lots and lots of people, a Borg cube is a pretty good option. If you've got a Borg cube on hand, use it for your refugees. And presumably, at some point, Picard was like, 7 of 9, can you hook me up with a Borg cube? And she was like, probably.
Well, I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah.
So
Hugh was on screen for a moment there.
Hugh. What do you mean? Where?
In the teaser.
I didn't get a teaser.
What?
Where's my teaser? I didn't get a teaser. It just went, and mine just went straight to credits. What does yours do?
It plays a teaser.
Seriously?
Yeah.
What?
This season on Star Trek Picard.
Like before the end credits?
Yes.
That is super weird. I do not have that on my version.
That's very strange.
What's going on? Who's living in the nightmare and who's not? I don't know, honestly.
You're definitely the one living in the nightmare because you didn't get to see Hugh for like a split second.
Well, okay then. I want to know now who got the commercial and who didn't. Tweet us at Trek FM. Did you get a commercial? I want to know.
I don't get how this is possible. It's not like a different thing started playing. Like mine, it's in the same stream of video.
Mine will goes straight to credits. Mine's been over with for like a minute.
What are you watching this on?
CBS All Access.
On what?
CBS All Access.
What platform?
On an Apple TV. 4K. Huh. 4K Apple TV, CBS All Access. I did not get a commercial. Is it because I'm watching it in Dolby Vision?
Oh, you know what? Maybe.
I'm going to try this on my phone and see what happens.
Maybe. I did not play that but version. My phone, so maybe that's
my,
what's
my
up.
Phone has HDR too, though. So I don't know. That is super weird. Wow. Wow. So you liked it?
Yes.
Cool.
I am very happy about Picard being back, and I'm furious that I have to wait days for another episode.
Yeah, there's like people who have seen the first three now. It's a lot of people have seen the first three. They showed them.
Yeah, yeah. Will Wheaton mentions that he's seen well past the first three episodes.
What a jerk. And
I said,
shut up, Wesley.
What a mean thing to say. I thought that your rule number one was to not be a dick.
I guess all's fair in love and Star Trek. All right. Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard in particular. Did you see that preview? Because I didn't. The best place to do that is in the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at Trek FM or send us an email using the contact form on our website. Just go to trek.fm/contact and choose to send to a show and choose the line. Max, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on the internet. I'm on Twitter at jmaxhagel. Lately, I've just been tweeting about Picard. I'll probably keep doing that for a while.
Yeah. What time did you wake up this morning to watch it?
Couldn't tell you.
had you already seen it by the time I texted you to say it's up?
Hold on. Let me see. I gotta look at the timestamp of your text.
It would have been like 5:30 or something like that.
Yes, I had seen it before then.
Okay. Well, cool.
I woke up around the time that my wife wakes up, which is about 4 a.m. Eastern time.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up my phone and I struggled to open my eyes, navigated to the CBS All Access app, confirmed that it was there, and said, okay, now.
And then you bolt it up and yeah, okay. Cool. All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mumbles3K, and you can also find me on our website, along with you, filmdamagepod.com, doing a show called Film Damage.
One of these days, I'll remember to mention that.
Yeah. And one of these days, I'll post our your live, as it was happening, reaction to your first time watching Solo, a Star Wars mm-hmm. story.
It's the Citizen Kane of Star Wars films compared to Rise of Skywalker.
Anyway, this has been fun. Can't wait to do it again next week, although I'm not sure exactly. It might be a little bit delayed because I'm going to be in Los Angeles next week, so I don't know exactly how that's all going to pan out.
Oh, yeah. You can't sit in a room with a microphone in Los Angeles.
Who does that? I'd have to bring a microphone to Los Angeles. We'll see how it goes.
Jeez.
I'm just saying.
It's Los Angeles.
I know.
There are more microphones in Los Angeles than in the entirety of the world.
You're probably right. All right. Well, until next time, the line must be drawn where?
He has a dog.
You said that before.
I did.